homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So this morning's retreat, although just an ordinary half-day retreat, is also a time when I have recommended that people who wanted to take the precepts in 2 weeks could come and just sit for a while and reflect on the step that they're about to take. So my talk this morning will be aimed in that general direction, toward the ceremony of taking the precepts, what we call lay ordination. I came across a snippet recently that talked about the word jukai. Jukai is the term that we give, I think traditionally in Japan and here, to the week-long retreat where we reflect on and commit to taking the precepts. And one of the first ceremonies is the ceremony of reading the precepts. The whole of Jukai, that word Jukai, I'm not a scholar or anything like that, but there is in it this idea of opening the gate of the precepts, opening the gate to the practice of the Buddhas. The precepts are sometimes called the conduct of Buddhas. And as part of the week-long Jukai retreat, at a certain point, we'll do a ceremony called recognition. And in that recognition, we climb up onto the altar and are recognized as baby Buddhas, as incipient Buddhas, as Buddhas to come. We're recognized as Buddha. When we take the precepts, effectively we become Buddhas. In the Chinese monastic tradition, you'll often hear a monk's name and it will begin with the word sek. In our tradition, of course, Reverend Master Jiu Kennett was ordained by a Chinese monk, Sek Kim Seng, and his Dharma family almost always starts with the names almost always start with that prefix, Sek. And in that tradition, in that way of thinking, that Sek means Shakyamuni Buddha. It's the family name of those monks, of those monastics. So, in a sense, and that ordination ceremony that she went to, that she did there, is the first taking of the precepts as a monastic. When we're ordained as monks, we take the precepts to enter the monastic family, to enter the family of Shakyamuni Buddha. And when we, as lay people, take those precepts, we too are entering the family of the Buddha. We're going through the gate of the precepts and entering the family of the Buddhas. Sometimes, at some point, we, in our monastic family, we're referring to a monastic conference as a family gathering. And some of the monks don't have such great family relations, and they bridled at that notion. Their association of family is not necessarily a positive one. So if it helps you, you can take on the idea of entering the family of the Buddhas. But nevertheless, we do enter that gate. We enter the gate into the realm of the practice of the Buddhas, into the mandala of the Buddhas. It's another step closer to the center, to our center. I've talked a little bit lately about a mandala, and I think we've probably all seen one or two at this point. There's a classic thing that the Tibetans do where they build a sand mandala over time. They labor in detail to make a beautiful painting of a mandala with sand, and then after many hours of labor, wipe it away in impermanence. When we take the precepts, we are entering into the mandala of the Buddhas. A mandala, I think the word in its sort of simplest translation means a circle. And that circle is an area of training, a realm of training, a realm of practice. And there, when we enter that mandala, there are all manner of teaching that we receive in it. If you ever get a chance there to look, either travel to Indonesia or look in a book, there's a mandala there called Borobudur. I believe it's on Java. This is a giant mandala in three dimensions with all kinds of statuary and stupas and whatnot. And it sits on a hill. The center of the hill is the center of the mandala is the top of the hill, and as you climb up through the concentric circles of the mandala, you go through these little passageways from one circle to the next. And that's a kind of classic thing in a mandala. There are little gateways from one circle to the next as we go from one stage of practice to the next stage of practice. Now, one of the interesting things about that is that classically, those gateways are guarded, often by a fierce being. And we have to be able to sort of get past that fierce being, to find a way through practice to not let that fierce being scare us away. One of the things that we've noticed and that people notice over time is that with the taking of the precepts, it's going in one step, in one circle on that mandala. It's entering the gate. And often that going in can bring up what we call the koan. It can bring up worry and fear, or whatever our koan manifests as, whatever our spiritual question manifests as. And sometimes I think, there it is. That's the fierce being that's asking us, do we really want to take this step? Do we really want to go in? Sometimes that fierce being that arises within us comes up before the taking of the precepts. Sometimes it comes up during the taking of the precepts. Sometimes it comes up afterwards. Sometimes it doesn't appear at all. Just go in. But it is useful to be prepared for that. Be prepared to be challenged. Do you really want to do this? And therein is the secret to that challenge. Do you really want to do this? Yes, I want to do this. I have a memory of listening to my own teacher give a Dharma talk at Jukai one year that I was there. It wasn't the first time I had done Jukai. I was a layperson at the time and heard this monk giving a talk And he said that we can, when we take refuge, it's like we're planting a tree. Like he was thinking of those forest workers who plant trees professionally to reforest big swaths of land. Chop the ground, stick the plant in, bury it, and move on. But there's a kind of, I just have this image of firm, assertive, we're going to do this, we're going to plant this tree. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I take refuge, and I mean it. So when we take the precepts, we are planting perhaps the most important tree in our life. And there's a kind of commitment in that. When that fierce being arises, we say yes. I normally don't like to talk about commitment too much. One of my monastic colleagues says that in the West we have to be careful about the two C's, cancer and commitment. You want to try to not talk about those things if you can avoid it, because it frightens people away. It's a little bit of one of those fierce beings there. On the image of a Chalanatha to the left of the altar, a Chalanatha is that blue fierce guy sitting in the flames, sitting on a rock. And the teaching of a Chalanatha is that he's determined to sit still no matter what. He's determined to sit still in the midst of the arising of greed, hatred, and delusion, to sit still in the midst of impermanence. In one hand, he holds a sword to cut through our misunderstanding. And in the other hand, he holds a rope. And that rope is the precepts. Part of the challenge of a commitment is that when we make a commitment, we narrow the field of possibilities, or seemingly so. When we commit to this thing, we can't have that thing. And being good Americans, good Westerners, we like to keep our options open. We don't like to narrow our field of options. But for most of us, or many of us, we come to a place where we realize that just pursuing what I like to do, what I want to do, is not enough. We want something deeper. And in order to find that deeper thing, it is very helpful to make a commitment. The precepts then are a commitment to allow ourselves to be bound, allow ourselves to be limited, to allow the field of choices to simplify. And we willingly accept that commitment, that binding. One of the very important points about these Chalanatha images, if they're done properly, River Master Jiu makes this point, that in the hand that is offering the rope of the precepts, that hand is offered palm up. It's offered, I think there's a technical term for it, and in the nuance of Japanese culture there probably is, but I don't know what it is, my apologies. But it's offered as a willing gift. It is offered not hand down as if forcing us to take them. It's offered palm up, waiting for us to come and take it, waiting for us to take up the precepts, to bind ourselves. When I was ordained as a novice, there's a tradition of asking a new monk three times, a potential monk three times before they do the actual ordination ceremony. And so one day at tea, with River Master Jiu and the monks at Shasta, she asked me, "Do you want to be ordained?" And I was to be ordained with another person, another woman, a woman, and she asked Reverend Alethea first, and Reverend Alethea said yes. And she asked me, "Do you want to be ordained?" And I said, "It's not... I said, it's not so much that I want to, it's that I..." It's not so much that I want to, it's that I need to. And she smiled and nodded, and we went on with tea. Later, though, River Master Daizui, who was her chief assistant at the time, tracked me down and in the kitchen, kind of said, "I just wanted to check. I think I know what you meant by that, but we want to make sure, you know, you're not being coerced into doing this by the vice abbot or some other reason. So what did you mean by that? You need to." He wanted me to make sure, he wanted to make sure that I was doing it voluntarily. And I explained it best I could, and he said, "Okay." I was very impressed, but very careful about that. So I hope that in your own way you will consider that this is a voluntary step. It's a thing. It's a thing between us and the Buddha. Sorry, it kind of stirs up strong feelings. So here we are, a commitment. And it's a commitment that's quiet in its own way. The Buddha doesn't require it of us, but if we commit to it, then the Buddha will respond. The Buddha will return much greater, return blessings much greater than we can imagine from it. It's not even like that. It's just there's something returned. There's something returned. In one sense, this is a commitment. I used to think, lately we've been talking about Star Trek at some Dharma discussions here, and my thinking is probably perhaps too dominated by Star Trek, but I used to think that becoming a postulant was like entering the neutral zone, and then becoming a monk was like entering Romulan space. Nobody knows what it's like until you go there. And this is the way it is with the precepts. None of us know what it's like until we make the commitment. This is not different than other kinds of commitments that we make in life. We can't know, I don't know, what it's like to be married, what that commitment is like. But you can plainly see that when that commitment is made, in one way or another, whether formally or informally, something changes about that relationship. There's something different about it. And when we commit to the precepts, one level or another, something changes in us. It's different for us. The precepts, in some sense, again, are always quiet. I like to think to myself that the still small voice, the voice of the Buddha within, Buddha nature as it speaks to us, the true dragon, it rarely shouts at us. Almost never. Just a little quiet voice saying, oh, what about this? So in our commitment, we have to keep returning there to that willingness to just listen to that thing. It doesn't force us. We just have to keep coming back and asking for the help of the precepts. But it will remind us from time to time. Well, maybe in surprising ways. It will remind us from time to time in surprising ways. So when that fierce being comes and says, is this really what you want to do? Sit still in that. Sit still and listen. The precepts are a commitment to our own heart, the Buddha within us. We take them publicly because it kind of helps beings to do that. But it is fundamentally a commitment between us and our own heart, between us and the Buddha. It's nice when you can get together and sit with a whole group of people, a whole group of friends who are intent on the same thing as we, or at least in the ballpark of being intent on that thing. But sometimes you might show up and there's only us. Most of the time, we go through a life in that state, alone, alone with the precepts. So, there it is, a refuge for us. When we say yes to this thing, yes to our own heart, yes to the precepts, we are again entrusting ourselves to the Buddha, entrusting ourselves to the fundamental thing. We are planting a tree that will provide protection and shelter for the rest of our life and beyond. All we have to do is continue to water it and tend it. Precepts then are a commitment again to our own heart and to what we see at one point as a way of improving ourselves. Maybe not that. as a way of connecting to some deeper part of myself and giving expression to that thing. So when that fierce being comes for each of us, and it still comes for me, whenever I do something to take my practice deeper, some commitment to take my practice deeper, commit to teaching someone or some project in the temple or something like that, that fierce being comes and says, in one way or another, usually my own inadequacies arising, is this really what you want to do? I do my best to sit still and listen and to say yes. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha.